Well, now we know why he said no to begin with, because he'd already figured, we got to swim across this thing naked. You're in a raft with a motorboat pushing you across the way, so you are all in.
Hey, we want to thank those who have taken the time and the resources to support Trail Runner Nation. We appreciate those Patreon subscribers. If you're interested, you can go to our webpage, trailrunnernation.com. On the top left, there's a little support us. When I say us, it's supporting the community and what we're trying to accomplish here at Trail Runner Nation.
Ladies and gentlemen of the wide, worldwide ultra running community, you are listening to nothing less than the greatest Trail Running Nation podcast on earth. It is the Trail Runner Nation podcast.
But I know it's on the upper edge, and you guys have won a couple of awards. And
whoa!
Okay, are we ready?
Yeah.
I'm recording.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
And I'm Scott War. And today, we're always trying to build your knowledge and create good information for you to be a better runner. And today is just kind of a fun one. We're going to talk with a couple different people about adventures that they created on their own, and they're very, very different. The first one we're going to talk about is with elite athletes Rob Krar and Mike Foote, and we have them on the horn right now, and we're going to talk to them about their amazing crossing of the Grand Canyon rim to rim to rim, the alternate route where they set an FKT. Don?
Hey, we've got Rob with us, and you've heard Rob Krar on this podcast in the past if you're a longtime listener. He's been Ultra Runner of the Year in 2014 and 15, named one of the most important, influential people in running by Runner's World magazine. That's quite an honor to have, Rob.
It is, without a doubt. Don and Scott, thanks for having me on again. It's been quite a while, but it's a pleasure to be here.
Hey, I'm not done with your accolades here, Rob. 2015 Western States victory, ran it in 14:48. In 2013, he knows something about this rim to rim to rim. He's ran it in 6 hours, 21 minutes, and 47 seconds. That's 42 miles with a couple of big climbs in it. And his partner on this FKT on the alternate route, Mike Foote. And he has the world's record for the most vertical ski, 61,200 feet in 2018. I have a question about that because I really didn't understand what they're measuring there. I get feet, but I don't know what you did. But I want to learn. Three times second place at a Hard Rock 100 in 2010, 15, and again in 17. Third place at the UTMB in 2012, which is fantastic, especially when you're wearing the American flag over there. And he has a course record at Bighorn 100 in 2012. And I think that's about all the time we have for the show, Scott. These guys are full of things they've accomplished. Mike, tell me a little bit more about this 61,200 feet of vertical ski. I know Scott is a big skier. He's rolling his eyes saying, come on, Don, we all know what that is. But for the rest of us, what is that? What did you do?
Yeah. First of all, thanks for having me, guys. So that was just a fun adventure of seeing how much vertical I could climb and ski in a given day. So it's what it says it is. It's over 60,000 feet of climbing in 24 hours. So 61,200 feet up and 61,200 feet down in a single day, which was a big push. And I should clarify, Killian Jornet has the world record now. I inspired him to go out and crush my soul the following year. And, I think he did a significant amount more than I did, but, it was fun to claim the world record there for a little while.
And I will tell you that Mike did it the hard way. I come from the other world, Mike. I'm a downhill skier, and there are world records for vertical feet skied on downhill, but they're going and using the chairlift to go up and then ski down. So they go up to the top on the chairlift, tuck it all the way down to the bottom, and it's the easy way to do it. You actually climbed, skinned up the mountain, and then came down, right?
Correct. Yeah, that sounds nice. The downhill sounds like a better route.
Hey, Rob, did you notice how Scott dropped the word skinned in there like he knows the lingo? Because I think that's part of the in crowd that knows that term.
Yeah, that's a new one for me. Skinned. I skinned up the mountain. I guess it works.
Yeah. Speaking of skinned, both of you bore your skin on this route. I want to hear the story of this alternate route crossing of the rim to rim to rim. I've never even heard of this alternate route. And I think I had my story mixed up. Whose grand idea was this?
Yeah, so it's a route that, you know, I think both Rob and I have been a little bit familiar with for a couple of years, yet neither of us had spent any time on it. And just like a lot of people, I was going quite stir crazy at the end of 2020, wanting to find an adventure, something to do safely. And, you know, I just went down the rabbit hole of fun routes to maybe explore, and this one really caught my attention and really inspired me to dig into it more. And on a wild hair, I texted Rob one night in mid-December and said, hey, do you want to go do the rim to rim to rim alternate with me? And he shot me down.
Is that right?
It was very true. It was a bit of a shock to receive that text on December 15th. And after a night of sleeping and maybe dreaming or maybe having nightmares about it, I politely declined. But I couldn't get the thought out of my head. And a couple days later, I found myself standing at the Colorado River after scouting the South Bass Trail and staring at the swim we would need to make twice on the day.
You know, just at the start of the story, December 15th, the text is made. And then the 31st, you're already running. I mean, not a lot of time to prepare. You guys are like ready athletes any time of the day. Bell rings, suited up, ready to go. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, it was well out of our comfort zone. And I think both Rob and I had spent a lot of the year kind of spinning our wheels and not really having a ton of direction, you know, with this, you know, amidst everything going on. And so this really helped focus our attention in a 2-week period. And I got a COVID a negative COVID test, headed down to Arizona, met up with Rob, and yeah, we were running pretty quick.
Mike, I got to ask you this question. So Rob has all of an overnight to think about it and less than 2 weeks to actually put things together logistically and go do it. How long were you thinking about this? Was this kind of a whim thing, or have you been thinking about this for a few months?
Oh no. It was the exact same thing. It was just on my radar, and I figured, and you know, we can talk about this more, but the route itself, you know, I really think the spirit of that route, because it's so unlike the more well-known rim to rim to rim route in the Grand Canyon, which on a given day, you could pass hundreds of people on that trail. Like Rob and I saw zero people on this route. You know, we were able to go from the rim to rim to rim in the Grand Canyon all by ourselves, which was a really wonderful experience. And the spirit of that route, I believe, is very much doing it with a partner. And so I was really, you know, as soon as I thought about the route, then Rob popped into my brain, because he and I have a long history of fun adventures together, whether it's ski mountaineer racing in Europe or trail racing all over, you know, North America or even in Western Europe. And so he and I have done some stupid adventures together, and I was hopeful I could talk him into it.
Hey, Mike, I think one of the reasons you didn't see anybody is because you were running it on December 31st. Now, I don't know that much about rim to rim to rim. Don's run it once. We're planning to go down there this spring. But there's certain windows you can run this, and it's not in December. So you probably could have done the traditional route and not seen anybody on December 31st. Most everybody's like staying up late on the 31st or getting ready to ring in the new year.
Yeah, certainly the north side of the corridor trails north of the Colorado River is pretty bare in the off season, but especially so on the South Bass Trail, no doubt about it.
So let's talk about this alternate route. We're all pretty familiar with the traditional route. How close is this alternate route, and tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so the South Bass Trail, as the crow flies, is probably 20, 25 miles downriver of the Kaibab and Bright Angel Trail, which most people are familiar with if they've dropped into the Grand Canyon. And, you know, it's remote without a doubt. The drive out is pretty challenging itself. And, you know, it's interesting because the South Bass Trail to the river is quite a, well, it's really a beautiful trail and quite runnable. But once you get to the north side, you know, you cross the river, it's very challenging. What was that? 16 miles from the river to the north rim, following a lot of washes, a little bit of route finding and navigation. But overall, you know, it was a dry snow year. So even though we had some snow in the north rim, because it was such a dry winter thus far, it was actually, I shouldn't say ideal, but it ended up being quite, manageable conditions for us out there.
When you say manageable, do you have a temperature for us? So we can put this into perspective, because at the bottom of this canyon, we're about to talk about something that brings this temperature into play. So what was the temperature like?
Yeah. So I hail from Missoula, Montana, where I think it's cold in the winter. And I think I realized how mild of a winter we have here in Western Montana compared to the high altitudes of like the high desert in Northern Arizona. It was 7 degrees when we started our run at 7 a.m. on, just a little bit before 7 a.m. on New Year's Eve. And we knew that within 2 hours we'd be swimming the Colorado River naked. And so, I think, you know, both Rob and I have talked about this. I think it was probably in the mid 30s, at the Colorado River. So obviously it's warmer, but it's still really cold. And then, you know, again, we were back up in the snow at the North Rim, and it actually snowed again, covering our tracks on the South Rim by the time we returned at 7 p.m. that night or 6:30 at night. So it was not a warm day. Like, I think Rob kept saying, it'll all be okay if there's sun. And we didn't have any sun. It was cloudy. it was squally. Yeah, and the river looked and felt as cold as it was.
Now, how about ice? I mean, that cold, is footing treacherous as you're going through there? Do you have to be careful and back your pace off a bit, which you could be a little more carefree in the summertime?
Yeah, certainly. There wasn't a ton of snow, but it was enough to be a little tricky. You know, in the South Rim, we had maybe a mile before the snow melted out. You know, as you go down further in the canyon, it gets warmer and warmer. So there's very rarely snow below the 1 or 2 mile mark in the Grand Canyon. But on the North Rim, you know, it's 1,000 feet higher than the South Rim. So I don't know. I'm guessing 3 to 4 inches on the North Rim. So we had to be a little cautious out there. Yeah, it was definitely a character building kind of day.
I know when I think about Arizona, for some reason in my mind, I think desert and warm and, you know, and then to hear how cold, if you're saying Montana is warm compared to these conditions in Arizona, the two just don't fit. But it does get cold in the desert, the high desert.
Absolutely. I mean, we camped out on some Forest Service property prior to the attempt, and, you know, I'm in a 0 degree bag and just barely staying warm enough. I think Rob had a negative 20 and was cold that night. So we, you know, you wake up, everything's frozen. The water you need for your coffee is frozen. I mean, it's, and the whole time, like, I mean, we keep going back to thinking, oh my gosh, we have to jump into the river in 2 hours time or half, like an hour's time. And just the mental component of that was, it was a lot.
Yeah, I'll never forget waking up in the middle of the night numerous times in a minus 20 degree bag, freezing cold, and wondering how in the world we're going to swim across Colorado River naked in just a few hours. And I think we had originally hoped to get started at 6:30, but we got delayed because our water was a frozen block of ice, and we had to have our coffee and oatmeal before we started.
So let's fast forward. So we know you wake up, water's frozen, delayed because you got to melt the water before you could actually eat and get a hot drink in you. Was the plan from the beginning that you were going to swim naked across the Colorado River? Was that the plan, or was this something that you just said, let's just do it?
Yeah, I'll jump in there. My plan was to do whatever was the most comfortable thing across the Colorado River. I wanted to either bring a wetsuit down, or I even borrowed a ultra lightweight pack raft from a friend, you know, and I tried in vain to talk Rob into one of these modalities to use across the river so that it would be less scary. And, you know, he, as we all know, Rob's a calculated, thoughtful guy. And he was just very firm in his belief that, just stripping down in our clothes or stripping down out of our clothes, throwing them into a dry bag, tying that around our waist and swimming across would take the least amount of time. And therefore we would lose the least amount of heat, in dealing with the logistics of everything. And, you know, turns out he was right.
Well, now we know why he said no to begin with, because he'd already figured we got to swim across this thing naked. You're in a raft with a motorboat pushing you across the way. So you were all in.
I think there was a third option of bring a bottle of whiskey and wait for a rafting trip to come by. But I think that would have negated the FKT attempt.
Yeah, one of the things that sort of had me thinking in that moment when I said no to Mike was I just didn't want to bother with the logistics of a wetsuit or a pack raft. And then one of the reasons I ended up saying yes was it popped into my head that I thought it would be efficient and doable to just jump in naked. And it worked out really well. It's really about heat management. And we replaced that weight and volume of a wetsuit with a big puffy jacket. So we were able to get into warm clothes within seconds of getting out of the river, whereas getting out a wetsuit, you know, it's cumbersome and takes a couple minutes, and that's could be enough time to really drop the core body heat.
Well, you know, most of us are familiar with the iconic now picture of you guys jumping in and swimming across. So how did you get that picture? I mean, I see two bodies, and tell me about the photographer. How did you guys pull that off?
Yeah, my wife Christina and our friend Buck were at the river crossing both times. As Mike mentioned, we tried to keep the spirit of this route as pure as possible. So even though they were present at the river crossings, we never accepted any aid the entire day. But they were there to document and sort of enjoy the spectacle, and certainly were there as a bit of a safety factor as well.
And not much to see, I would think, that cold. Go ahead, Scott. I didn't mean to jump in on you.
No, I was going to say, I've jumped in cold water before. I want to know how that all happened. Did you go and take your toe and put your toe in the water? Or did you just say, we're going to do this regardless of how cold it is, and the first time I'm going to touch this thing is when I submerge myself?
Yeah. I mean, you kind of get to the edge and I mean, you're so committed at that point. It's not a decision at that point, but I think I'm sitting there with a pea cord around my waist and a, you know, dry bag filled with my stuff. And I'm looking at the river and Rob's just a few seconds behind me getting ready. And I think that 10 or 15 seconds of contemplating it felt like forever, but knowing that the momentum of the day and the objective was just going to take me in. And it's intimidating. It was really intimidating, but also ultimately, you know, you've got to have respect for the river, but it ultimately was uncomfortable, but okay.
I really, there's a short little film clip of that moment as well. And, you know, Mike thinks it's 10 or 15 seconds. It's really only like 2, 3, 4 seconds, but I love it because he just pauses and I could just imagine the lightning bolts of thoughts running through his head before he commits and he jumps in. And then, yeah, after that point, I got no choice. I gotta follow him. So just,
yeah, that's right. When your buddy goes, you have to follow because, and Mike's going to think he better be following me because I'm jumping in.
Yeah.
I want to know what was the attitude there? I mean, I'm thinking if I'm putting myself in your shoes, or because you're not wearing any shoes, if I put myself in your situation, I don't know whether I would be just laughing hysterically or just really, really solemn and trying to focus on trying to keep my body warmth. Were you guys just laughing or was it pretty serious?
Yeah, I don't think there was any laughing in the moment. It's great to reflect back on it now and chuckle about it. But yeah, we were in the zone. We were focused, you know, not only on the day itself, but giving a great deal of respect to a very fast flowing, dangerous river. You know, we felt confident in our ability levels, But there's no doubt in my mind. Like I said, when I was on that scouting trip down to the bottom, it was this beautiful sunny day, 55 degrees. And I thought to myself, I got this. We got this if it's sunny out. But it turned out to be very cold, overcast, and it was really damn intimidating staring at that river and jumping in.
Rivers are scary when they're running that fast. Did you have a thought in your mind, we could end up down wherever where the Colorado River goes, down at the bottom? You might have a new fastest known time as a river traveler. So tell us about the conditions, the current, and the obstacle that set for you.
Yeah, the first crossing from south to north, I mean, you know, thankfully Rob scouted it. We did our research. I mean, there's definitely like put in and take out spots that you want to hit further down river. So you end up on these soft beaches versus scrambling up on rocks. And so luckily each time you've got a trajectory you're heading towards and you can let the river take you, which is nice. You're not fighting it too much per se. But you've got to have that knowledge, because if you miss your takeout, then yeah, you are heading further down and you might have to have some sketchy climb out of the river along a cliff edge or something like that. But yeah, you're at the base of the Bass Rapids for the first one. And so there's definitely, you're at the base of some wave trains, which can be a little splashy and spicy feeling. And then the second from north back to south, it's actually quite flat. The water's moving fast, but it's flat water, but it's a little bit longer of a swim. So that at that point your body's more fatigued, it's perhaps not regulating temperature as well, and if anything the fear is just, you know, trying to stay warm enough and getting out of the water as quick as possible.
What was more difficult, the first crossing or the second crossing? I mean, as far as contemplating Mike's 10 to 15 seconds, it was really 3 to 4 seconds. Were you more fearful the first time or the second time coming across?
In my mind, undoubtedly the first crossing, you know, that's what had been running through our minds for the, you know, 15 days between the idea and the execution. The second crossing was still demanding, you know, like Mike said, it took a little longer. We got caught in a little upstream, eddy near the end, which added probably 30 seconds. And no doubt we were both shivering, pretty solid, and took us a couple miles of uphill climbing, to get warm back up after that second crossing.
How did you warm up after? I mean, you pull yourself onto the shore. I can imagine, first of all, I think back to, the famous, Seinfeld, episode where they talk about shrinkage.
Well, ordinarily I wouldn't mind, but
what?
Well, I just got back from swimming in the pool and the water was cold.
You mean shrinkage?
Yes. Significant shrinkage.
So you feel you were shortchanged?
Yes.
You must have been just numb. How did you warm yourself up, or did you just get clothes on and start hiking and that's what warmed you up?
Yeah, clothes on and starting hiking. I mean, I had a raggedy old camp towel that I cut in half and gave Rob the other half just to like kind of squeegee ourselves off before throwing our clothes back on. But I mean, it was just a matter of getting the clothes on, throwing the like insulation layers, like the puffy jackets on as quickly as possible and start moving to generate that heat. That was the whole goal. And yeah, we were kind of fumbling a bit. Like there's like this video of me trying to put things back in my running vest pockets and looking like I don't know what I'm doing and just feeling a little disoriented, but overall good. And as soon as we started to move it, things started to, yeah, warm up.
Yeah. And that's when you're happy for uphill, right? You warm up faster uphill instead of cruising at your speeds. I mean, going downhill for Scott and I, either way, you're good, right? Not real fast, but you guys are creating some velocity when you're traveling downhill.
Well, it's amazing that the technology of down, you know, you put on a down jacket and a windbreaker over, you know, I want to say within 5 minutes, we were already stripping out of our puffy after the crossings, wow. At least the south to north. So yeah, we generated heat quick and warmed up pretty efficiently out there.
That's amazing.
Let's talk about equipment for this thing. You mentioned puffy jackets, you mentioned dry bags. This was an unsupported FKT, I take it. What kind of gear did you have?
Yeah, I guess it's worth clarifying, because we had people at the river, even just their presence takes it out of the unsupported realm. As far like the true sticklers would say, it's not an unsupported route, and we don't claim it as an unsupported route, but it's in the quote unquote spirit of it, in that we never accepted aid. But if you have somebody that they can even just the presence of people mentally is a boost, so that means it's a supported effort, or self-supported effort. Anyways, that's kind of splitting hairs, but there's going to be somebody listening that's going to say something. So we're not claiming it as unsupported.
We would have been cheated of those pictures though, Mike, and that makes it worth it. So we're going to give a pass on that.
Exactly.
But the community, somebody in the community will voice that. So good point. So go ahead and finish with your comments. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Gosh, I mean, Rob can jump in as well. I mean, I think the beauty of these runs are they are so simple. I mean, you've got a couple layers. You've got, a running vest with a bunch of food, and you're filling up water along the way. Luckily, this time of year, we were able to actually fill up water pretty often, so we didn't have to carry a ton. And with the cooler temps, you know, we weren't forced to carry a few liters at a time. It was more a half liter at a time and fill as you go, which is a real blessing in the desert, as we all know, to be able to pull that off. We were also testing out some of the new trail running shoes that the North Face that they've just released, the Vectives, which treated us really well. And that's kind of it. I mean, am I missing anything, Rob?
Well, just the fact that you're really proud that you were the one person that kept the Vectives on his feet the entire time. Mike swam across the river with his shoes on, where I was I was only wearing the P-cord. So a little difference there.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I kept the shoes on.
So good for running and swimming, right? They're truly a cross-train piece of equipment.
I used to be a raft guide, and I've actually rode the whole stretch of the Colorado River and love it. And I've always been taught that you keep your footwear on so you don't cut your feet on anything in the river. And so no way was I taking my shoes off for that crossing.
Yeah. So are you two both strong swimmers, or did you, you know, go down to the local YMCA and jump in and get some quick instruction?
You know, I come from a background in high school of running and triathlon. So I have some experience, but it's been a decade plus since I, you know, jumped in a pool, put some goggles on and swim laps. So it was still a shock to put some effort into the swim.
How about you, Mike?
Yeah, I'm comfortable in the water, but I can't swim half as well as Rob. He got in the water after me and got out of the water before me the first crossing. He just smoked me because he has such better form. But I'm good in the water, but you won't see me in the pool doing laps anytime soon.
Mike, I don't know whether swimming technique is a good gauge on how fast he got across. I think that's if the water's that cold, I think I may have been able to keep up with Rob. I mean, I am focused and I'm kicking. I'd be moving as fast as my body has ever moved in its life.
There wasn't much technique in that swimming. I look at that video and a couple of seconds after I jump in, you can hear me kind of like hoof, like, you know, vocalize how cold it is. And it looks god awful out there, but we got ourselves across nonetheless.
Hey, Mike, do you think your record here is safe with Kilian Jornet?
The river crossing?
the river, the whole thing with the river crossing. I've got to think that there should be a full category for a naked skinny dip river crossing on this. I think just logistically, your times are no doubt incredible, tough to touch. But if you have to add that component, I think some people are going to not even try and they'll drop from it.
Exactly. Yeah. I think if people find a better time of year, they can thread that needle of temperature a little bit better. And oh yeah, that it can go a lot faster. Absolutely. It'll be fun to see that time get lowered over the years. And I think more people will attempt it as an alternative to the very different experience that is the main like Kaibab route. So it just has that sense of adventure, that navigation, that teamwork necessary to stay on route. I mean, it just requires completely different skills than just aerobic fitness and speed. It's more about a more complex skill set and tying everything together to have a good day.
Wow.
Now this record, there's kind of a little competition that Rob's has here with Jim Walmsley, because Rob initially had the traditional crossing rim to rim to rim record, and then Jim came in and broke that, and Jim with a couple pals held the record on this one, and now Mike and Rob now own the record on this one. My question is, this was on December 31st, and I can't imagine that that's the ideal time to set an FKT for the rim to rim to rim. I would assume that it's probably better to do it in the fall or early in the spring. Do you think it's how much more time would you save if you did it in ideal weather? That's, I guess, the question that I'm trying to search for.
Scott, you should have started with that end part. It would have saved a lot of time.
That's why we have edit buttons, right?
Yeah, you know what's interesting is Jim and his friends set that FKT, I want to say it was late November or early December of 2018, I believe it was. So, you know, not ideal conditions for them either. They certainly had snow in the North Rim as well. So I think... you know, just as you said, it's about threading the needle, because if you wait too long, it's going to be 100 plus degrees at the bottom, and that's going to add a whole lot of other difficulties. You know, I think the ideal time to run in the canyon is that April, May timeframe, or late September, October, early November. I think, you know, just like I remember when Dakota Jones broke the traditional rim to rim to rim FKT, he ran 6:42. And he wrote, you know, under ideal circumstances and the right athlete, I think this FKT can go under 6 hours. And that just seems so mind-boggling. But sure enough, you know, I ran 6:20 and change, and then Jim comes along and breaks that six-hour barrier. So to me, looking at that number of 11:22 for the alt route, you know, I think the magic number is 10 hours.
The gauntlet has been thrown.
Now... We have to, because of our lawyer and our legal policies here at Trail Runner Nation.
We have that, Scott?
Yeah, I just made it up. We should probably kind of give a little bit of a disclaimer here. This is probably not the route that typical Joe Schmo... I mean, I want to go do the rim to rim to rim this spring. That's not the first route I'm going to take. And, you know, this is a difficult, difficult route. Is that correct?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think it's to be considered with a lot of respect. I mean, obviously we've talked about it a lot, but the river crossing poses probably the biggest consequence. So I think people need to really know what they're getting into. And then frankly, when you're out on that even the South Rim is very remote. Just getting to the trailhead is an adventure in and of itself. But then ultimately, once you cross that river, it's as hard to get to you as anything, especially in the winter when people can't drive back to the North Rim or anything like that. So, you might be in a national park, but you're as far out there and as remote as you can be anywhere in the, lower 48. So, you need to have the right skills. You need to have the right, equipment and take those precautions.
Well, guys, thanks for joining us to talk through this and some of the logistics and the excitement and the uniqueness of your FKT. And we'd like to have you both on again to talk some more about different aspects. I know that, Rob, you and your wife, Christina, have a running camp that you have been working on for a while and have successfully operated. Tell us a little bit about that. And then anything that you're doing too, Mike, we're ready to listen. So go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, thanks. We started our running camps and retreats back in 2015. Not really knowing what to expect. And they very quickly turned into so much more than we ever could have imagined. So it's been a little rough with COVID the past year, but we're hoping to get those back going this summer. And, they really bring me a ton of joy. So thanks for allowing me to give a little shout out.
How can someone find out more about that, yeah. Rob?
Easy, robcarr.com website, or hit me up on any of the social media handles, DM me, easy.
How about you, Mike?
I spend you know, the majority of my year designing experiences for runners as well, but in the race and event atmosphere. So put on trail races all over Western Montana, including the biggest event, the Rupp Mountain Runs, which we put on in Labor Day. So if folks are looking for a fun trail run up in Montana, be sure to check some of those out and join us.
Any skinny dipping required in any of your races?
We don't have a category for that, but it's worth considering. We'll have some water obstacles in some of the events coming up. That's a good idea.
and like Scott said, where's the best place to find your races?
The Rut would be runtherut.com or all of our events. You know, we run through the Runner's Edge here in Missoula, Montana, so runnersedgemt.com.
Excellent. So does this mean that you owe Rob, Mike? So next time that Rob has a midnight text that says, "Hey, I have an idea," are you automatically committed, or do you have the right of refusal?
No, 100%. Yeah, I'm
Sweet.
Committed.
Brainstorming has commenced.
Hey guys, thanks for coming on and sharing your great adventure with us. We think it's amazing.
Yeah, thanks for having us, guys. That was fun.
Yeah, it was for us too. Thanks. So go out and run.
Mas.
What a great story with Rob and Mike and the Grand Canyon crossing and all the adversity, which is really about adventure running, right? And you can do any type of adventure. You don't have to go to the Grand Canyon and swim naked across the river. You can just step out your front door and do what Corey Reese has done.
And we're going to find out about his cool little adventure right now.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation, but this one is kind of a shorty, Scott.
This is a short podcast. I was perusing social media as I always do. I never spend time. I peruse. And came across a good friend who's been on the podcast before, Corey Reese. And the knucklehead did just a crazy thing. And I just laughed when I read this post. And I was talking to Don yesterday on our run about it. And Don goes, "Oh, that's incredible. We need to get Corey on." So I texted Corey and here he's with us. Corey, hey, thanks and welcome to coming back to our podcast.
Good to talk to you guys again. Thanks for the invite.
Corey is well known for doing just crazy stuff. He likes to run the organized trail runs and races, but he also goes out and does just some really bizarre stuff. And that's what I like about him. Very creative.
Scott, let me mention one of them and then Corey can straighten us out. He went on a cruise on an ocean liner and ran around the ship. How far did you run, Corey?
I did 100 miles on the cruise ship.
how many laps was that?
That was the bad thing. It took 16 loops to make a mile, so it ended up being 1,600 loops, which is way too many.
Was there any point in there that you're thinking, am I at 1,439 or 38?
Thankfully, I had a Garmin, like a foot pod, to do my tracking because, otherwise I would have been in big trouble.
I was wondering if you had one of those little clickers, those little thumb clickers.
Yeah. I did take one of those as a backup.
And another thing that stands out into my mind when I think of Corey is the iconic jumping pictures that it looks like he jumps maybe 20 or 30 feet in the air across canyons. And that's always been a lot of fun.
Well, thank you.
The reason we have Corey on is this post that he posted the day before yesterday. And tell us a little bit about that. When did this idea come to you? And then tell the story of how it evolved.
Well, okay. So our life has been kind of crazy the last couple of weeks. My daughter had a crazy sledding accident and broke her ankle and messed up her knee. She's been a mess. And so we've had to spend a lot of time helping her just with day-to-day stuff. And so I haven't been able to run too much over the past few weeks, and I was kind of itching to do a long run, and really the only time I had to do it was during the night. And so I decided a few nights ago that I would leave around, I think I left around 9 p.m. and in southern Utah, the big gas station chain, it's called Maverick, and so Maverick has all kinds of food that is really bad for you that I love. And so I thought, well, I'll just try and run to all of the Mavericks in St. George, Utah. And I figured out that there was 8 of them. And so I kind of just did like a rough idea of, okay, what route would I go if I wanted to hit all of them? And then I thought, okay, well, that'll be a good idea for a long run, but I want to challenge myself to eat or drink something at each place. And so at each of the Mavericks, I got something to eat or drink. And I guess it was maybe by the 6th or 7th Maverick, I was realizing like, I'm going to gain weight on this run.
So. This is a form of the beer mile. You're going to the Maverick and you're getting just crappy, unhealthy food.
Yes. That's exactly what it's like.
And I've been to the Mavericks. You can spend more money in the store than you can filling your tank.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
There's tremendous stuff.
And cinnamon rolls and all kinds of stuff.
So how many miles was this route to the 8 Mavericks in St. George, Utah?
It ended up being 23 from my house. And then I started thinking, I don't know, maybe for next time, if I go a little ways up the road, there's a city called Hurricane and then Laverkan. And so if I went up that way, I would be able to hit, I think there's 4 more up north. So that would make it more like a 50 or 60 mile run. So I don't know. That might be. Those are the bad thoughts that I start having in my head. Like, what can I do next time? So I don't know. Maybe next time it'll be a Maverick 50 miler to catch all of them in Southern Utah.
We refer to this as the Maverick 23 and the Maverick 55-ish. You know, yeah. I can see the shirts coming.
Exactly.
It's on Ultra Sign Up. I like it.
You may be able to get Maverick to sponsor you, Corey.
Yeah, exactly. I need to see if they'll give me some free Dr. Pepper refills or something.
So tell me about your extremes. You know, you go in and what's probably the simplest thing and what's the most outrageous thing you had at your Maverick aid station?
That's a good question. So the soda, the Dr. Pepper, that's a gimme. Like that's nothing. Yeah. I that's an everyday occurrence, whether I'm running or not. Unfortunately, it's my weakness. So that's pretty easy. But toward the end, it's, you know how it is, like after you get into a run for a while, you just don't want to eat anything. And so probably the hardest stuff was toward the end, just like I had to, I went pretty easy on myself and just had like some string cheese and chips. And so it wasn't too bad. But I guess my wife always makes fun of me. I really like, so Maverick has like these 2 packs of hard boiled eggs. And so I really like to get those when we stop at gas stations on our runs. And she just thinks that's insane, but I like them. So that might've been the craziest thing.
Okay. When you told me about the eggs earlier, Corey, I was thinking this was the jar that sits on the counter next to the pig's feet.
Yeah.
The eggs and the vinegar.
Yeah.
I thought you were like taking your left hand in the COVID world we live in. You're dipping your hand into the vinegar jar and pulling a hard boiled egg out of there.
if it was those, I could only eat one.
One is your limit.
We're not going to go crazy here.
Hey, so my question is, what was harder, the miles or the forced Maverick chow?
I think it was the food for sure. Because I just went slow. I mean, I always go slow, but I just did it kind of casual, and it wasn't really. I mean, that on that particular run, it wasn't even the miles that were hard. It was just getting really sleepy. So the getting tired and then the food were probably the hardest parts.
You know, that's what I love about Corey is, you know, we on the podcast, we always talk about you need a why, a strong why. And sometimes you need that for a training run. And this is just a creative way to say, I'm going to go out. I need to get out because I've been stagnant or sedentary. I've been helping my daughter. I need to get out. But rather than just going out for a 23-mile run, he creatively designs a why. And that's what I love about Corey is he's very creative. Anybody can do it. We can copy it, can't we? Is there a trademark on the Maverick 25?
Totally. Yeah, that's exactly my point. Is like, yeah, anyone can. Yeah, just I think the most important thing with running is to keep it fun. If it's not fun, you're doing something wrong. And it's for me, like, something that keeps me engaged is doing different things. I get bored with the same route every time. And so I think it's so important to just find something unique or something different to keep you engaged so that running stays fun and exciting.
It doesn't have to be fast. It has to be fun. And if it's not fun, then we can't stick with it too long. And you know what? Nobody really asks us, what was your time? No one's going to judge us. And anybody that really knows anything about time isn't going to judge anyway, because we know it's about experience. So you don't have to do it fast.
That's
right?
So true.
So my question to you is, as you enter these Mavericks, did you get any comments from people or people that work there? Like, what are you doing? Hey, it's 4:30 in the morning. Are you running to work? What's happening?
The only weird comment that I got was, I think it was one of the later ones. It was maybe 1 or 2 a.m. And I walked up to the counter and I had a cup of, it was coffee. And the guy said, mm-hmm. I don't know if that's, is that just hot chocolate or coffee? I'm sure he was thinking, like, why would you be getting coffee at 2 a.m.? And like, yeah, it wasn't hot chocolate.
How was it? Was it fresh?
No.
Or was this
the
pot from 2 days ago?
It tasted like it had been sitting there for 12 hours.
Hey, now, I know, I don't know much, but I know it's cold right now in Utah. That was an element that you had to factor in, or did you find out, you know, a mile into it that, wait a second, I could have picked a warmer time of the year to do my Maverick 23?
It was a little brisk. And I'll be honest, like, I told my wife, like, she was going to bed soon. And I said, well, leave your ringer on just in case. So, I mean, it's really not, when you do something like that, that's kind of the beauty of it, is if it is really bad, or if you just want to say, I'm out. I wasn't that far from home. So,
you know, you have to have an understanding spouse to say, hey, I know you're going to bed, but I'm going to go for a 23-mile run and not think that you're running to someone else's home.
That is so true. So I just submitted my article to Ultra Running Magazine maybe a week ago, and that is actually the topic of my next article, is like the spouses of ultra runners. Those are the ones that, like, they deserve some kudos because they put up with all our dumb stuff.
Yeah, she should get the t-shirt from this run. Yes. I'll tell you that. You shouldn't be wearing it. It should be on her.
Totally.
When the RD asks for your size, you better order it for her.
Yes, definitely.
Now, your wife's name, I believe, is Melanie. Has Melanie ever been surprised with any of your crazy ideas? When you came to her and say, hey, let's go on a cruise. By the way, while you're sitting at the pool, I'm going to be running 1,600 laps. Is she ever surprised?
I can say this with all sincerity. Ever since I started this whole ultra running thing 10 years ago, she has never been anything less than 100% supportive. Sometimes she'll, like, raise an eyebrow, like, really, do you really want to do this? But she's, anytime I'm like, hey, I'm thinking about going to run 100 miles at the track. Okay, what day are you thinking to do it? Like, she just is so amazingly supportive.
Hey, if you want to know more about Corey, he has a website, CoreyReese.com, and he's an author. He authored the book Nowhere Near First, which is absolutely the majority of us out there. And there should be another book that he's working on now. We won't spoil that. We'll get him on the show next when that finally gets put out.
Thank you.
And Ultra Running Magazine. He's a contributing author there, You've been doing that for a couple years now, a year?
I think it's, here's what's crazy. I was looking back. I think I just started my sixth year as a columnist with them. Crazy, huh? It really seems like it was like a year ago. It's gone by so fast.
And Scott, I think you and I need to do the 7-Eleven 24.
The Arco 5.
The AMPM. Yeah, the extra mile, the Chevron extra mile. We could go on and on.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love it.
Hey, Corey, thanks for inspiring us. Thanks for coming on last minute and sharing some of your crazy Mad Hatter brain ideas that you have.
Thank you, guys. Good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you, too.
Now go out and run.
Mas.